Today's episode of the NBA Show on the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by State Farm. Just like basketball, the game of life is unpredictable. Talk to a State Farm agent and get a teammate who can help you navigate the unexpected and help you handle whatever life throws your way. We have had a lot of unpredictable things, like the Suns start that we will talk about and this disappointing John Collins news that broke this morning. Get a teammate who can help you navigate the unexpected. Talk to a State Farm agent today about combining your home and auto insurance. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Vernon, and joining me as he does every Tuesday from TheRinger.com is Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin Obama, a.k.a. Kevin O'Concert, a.k.a. Kevin O'Camera, a.k.a. Kevin O'Conflict, a.k.a. Kevin O'Candyland, a.k.a. Kevin O'Shredder. Kevin!
Verno, what's going on this Tuesday morning? How you doing?
Well, you're what's going on. What an unbelievable response to the virtuoso performance that you put on as a guitar soloist. I know you had to be incredibly pleased by the response after we had mentioned it on Friday's episode. Then over the weekend, you put it out. And I must tell you, I got a little bit of a bone to pick with you.
Okay.
Because I'm thankful that you tagged me and said, hey, here's Chris Vernon.
I shouldn't have done that.
But my God.
Yeah.
I mean, look, for all of you that tweeted me over the course of the last 6 days, I didn't see it. Because all I have seen is responses to Kevin O'Connor's guitar solo for the last five days.
In situations like that, so they have the mute conversation button on Twitter. On that tweet, you can just hit the little down arrow and click mute this conversation. Then you won't get those notifications. But I tagged you thinking, oh, I'll put this on social because Chris mentioned it on the show. And then it's like, boom. I'm like, oh, damn, I probably should have just wrote Vernon instead of at Chris Vernon Show. But, you know, whatever. No, it was cool to see the response.
I saw it all, too. So I know that you got a lot of positive feedback. All right. Well, we have had a story break right before we are recording on this Tuesday morning, and that is that the young star for the Atlanta Hawks, John Collins, becomes the second guy since the season began and the third guy since this summer that has been busted with the anti-doping program that the NBA has. 25 games over a quarter of the season. The Atlanta Hawks are going to have to be without John Collins because he tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. This comes a week after we had DeAndre Ayton test positive and has to sit out for 25 games. And this past summer, Wilson Chandler. And three in a short span of time, including two, I think, very possible future stars in the league. This is shocking considering the amount of guys in the past few years that we have not seen. I mean, this has not been an issue within the NBA ever, really. You know, I mean, you've got to go back to hard drugs in the 80s when they had a real crisis in the NBA. But in terms of performance-enhancing drugs, while it has hit every sport, I mean, I'm talking all the way down to golf, guys getting suspended. The NBA has not had an issue with this. And some will roll their eyes and they will say, the NBA has had an issue with this and they just don't take it seriously. That's probably a debate for another day. What is without debate is they are taking it very seriously now. If you have two of the young stars already missing over a quarter of the season, and this is a very selfish thing that has taken place. I know he did what everybody does. I took something contaminated, but it is your responsibility as an NBA player.
What you brought up about, you know, this not being an issue in the past, I was reminded of something Derrick Rose was asked about back in 2011. He was asked by ESPN, the magazine, if 1 equals what are PEDs and 10 equals everybody's juicing, how big of an issue is illegal enhancing in your sport? And Rose said, 7. It's huge. And I think we need a level playing field where nobody has an advantage over the next person. So, you know, this is, you know, now over eight years ago now that Derrick Rose said that. And like you said, Chris, it has not been an issue at all, at least in the public eye. So it is interesting that two fairly high profile players in DeAndre Ayton a couple of weeks ago and now today John Collins have been, you know, caught for that. It's just interesting that out of nowhere these guys are getting caught. It's very interesting that of the timing of all this, because it hasn't happened in years, man.
And here's the thing. You have a lot of guys. I understand that weight training is different now than it ever has been in the past, and that guys take care of their bodies better than they have in the past, and they are more attentive to nutrition than they are in the past. That being said, there are so many guys with massive amounts of muscle in the NBA, and given that they are running every single night, it is sometimes, and especially, I thought it was a bigger deal maybe like 5-6 years ago, where I would be sitting there watching teams and I'd be like, oh, come on. Because these guys would look like, some of them turned into bodybuilders, and they're running every single night. It's very hard to keep on a massive amount of muscle if you're running every night, especially if you're doing sprints every night. And yet the guys got bigger, stronger, faster, just like they did in every other sport. And yet it was our belief that PEDs were of no consequence or not an issue in the NBA. I think the truth is probably they were an issue and the league just didn't take it as seriously. There is no question now they are taking this seriously, because rookie sophomore, you know, possible future all-star guys, future of the league guys that are out now for a long, long time.
And this is a significant loss for Atlanta too. John Collins last seen being one of the NBA's best players rolling to the rim, that Trae Young, John Collins pick and roll tandem, with Trae Young, according to Chris Haynes, set to return tonight. He loses his partner in the pick and roll, but not just the pick and roll. A guy who has become a very effective floor spacer for the Atlanta Hawks has improved significantly as a three-point shooter. So with Atlanta losing that player in Collins, this really hurts Atlanta's hopes of getting into the postseason. If you look at the numbers, Trae Young and John Collins last season, when those guys shared the court together, they had, including this year, they had a minus 2.8 net rating, which is not good. But with Collins off the floor and Young still on, that plummeted to minus 11. So that, I think that number at least reflects the importance of Collins for Trae Young as a shot creator and the impact it has on everybody else. And now you wonder, who replaces him? Is it somebody like Alex Len? Does he get more opportunities? Is it Bruno Fernando? Or could it even be Jabari Parker, who gets put into that role? Because the Atlanta Hawks, going back to preseason and a little bit during the regular season, have used Parker as an on-ball screener, as a guy rolling to the rim. So he can replace the floor spacing that Collins provided. And maybe you start using him as a rim runner more. So I'm going to be very interested to see how the Hawks adapt without Collins in the next 25 games.
Yeah, it's going to be Parker. I think that's going to be the guy. And this is another great opportunity for Jabari Parker to take advantage of. But this is an absolute killer for them. I mean, you just gave the numbers from last year, and you've got to imagine that is with Trae Young just figuring it out and having a dismal first couple months of the season before he really figured it out and got on that tear. And he started off this season on that same type of tear. This is a killer. It really is, to lose him, because I think without question, he's the second best player on their team. And he's also extremely consistent. Like, you're pretty well getting it out of John Collins every night. I feel bad for the Hawks, because this is, you know, they're super excited about this season. And you never know, in that Eastern Conference, you might have a chance at getting one of those last seeds and then taking your lumps in the playoffs for the first time. But that outlook becomes very, very bleak with losing Collins for 25 games. It's going to be hard to get wins.
He is just central to their identity.
Yes.
They run so much pick and roll with Trae Young, and the guy screening for him a lot of the time is Collins. And now that you lose that, it changes how you approach the offensive end of the floor in the half court. So that's why I think Parker has to get plugged into that role and just get utilized in something that will be a lot different for him, but has worked in, you know, little flashes in preseason and in the regular season. I'm hoping it works for Jabari Parker, because maybe this is the new type of role that's going to be big for him moving forward in his career.
It will hurt them way more than the Ayton loss has hurt the Suns.
Yes!
The Suns last night delivered the 76ers, though they were without Joel Embiid, they delivered them their first loss, 114 to 109 last night, and they are now well on their way to surpassing last year's win total, and frankly, any win total over the course of the last 4 years. It's been 4 years since they had more than 24 wins in a season, a combined 87 and 241. I got to see this team in person over the weekend, and I tweeted about this and was effusive in praise. Seeing them up close and personal. Now, I'm not letting you celebrate a ton about the bright future Suns, because frankly, none of the bright future is there besides Devin Booker. Nothing. Alex Lynn, TJ Warren, Tyler Ennis, Tyler Ulis, Bogdan Bogdanovich, Dragon Bender, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton. Like, none of them, none of the bright future is there except for Devin Booker. And I will also say that you and I think both, we didn't like their offseason. You know, I wasn't crazy about the Rubio signing. The Oubre signing was fine. And I didn't like what they did in the draft, moving off the sixth pick, which was Jared Culver, in order to take Cam Johnson, and then getting Dario Saric back in that deal. But I'll tell you this, and I'll always be honest about what I'm seeing. I'm there. I've seen that 60-loss team come in many times, and I'm watching them on Saturday night, and I'm thinking to myself, this is not a mirage. Now, I don't know what the ending win total will be, but if the expectation was that they are a peer of teams like the Grizzlies, that is not true. They are more of a peer of a team like Dallas this year, and I do think they have a real chance at fighting for one of those bottom seeds, especially given that Sacramento has been so bad this year already. So that's another team that may fall back and be worse than what we thought they were going to be, as well as some others. Seeing them up close, they got a lot of real players on that team now, and I absolutely love Baines on that team and in the role that he is. He calls out everything defensively and keeps the ball moving. And then offensively, Monty Williams has got that team sharing the ball like a team that's played together for a long time. I was mega impressed with him, Kevin. And then obviously last night, Booker goes off and they get the huge win.
Can I just say, in regards to the bright future Suns, the reason why they have a bright future is largely due to that guy, Devin Booker. The truth.
You don't get to do this. No.
No.
The whole idea was that they lost on purpose over and over again, and they would end up being good because of it, and that didn't have shit to do with why they're good. He was 13th pick.
I know he was.
But so
Is that you have that blossoming star. I'm talking 2.5 years ago. 2.5 years ago, you have this blossoming star player, and then moving forward, you're losing games, adding more talent, and then cap flexibility comes to build around those guys. But Booker is the key reason why. And Ayton, I still like as a player, even though he's out now. Ayton is still a very good, talented player. And yes, with the bright future Suns, maybe it hasn't happened the way you expected, but Booker was and still is always central to that.
Stop.
I'm not going to stop. In last night's game, we saw the manifestation of what he can become as a player.
With that's just ridiculous. They didn't have to suck to get Devin Booker.
With the amount of versatility we saw from Booker in last night's game, dude, that was a sensational performance against some great defenders on Philly. I mean, Ben Simmons is a hard guy to score against, and he made life hard on Booker with some of the baskets that he had to score. But Booker's ability to create off the dribble using hesitations, change of pace, can score at the rim with either hand, pull up from anywhere. Dude was awesome last night, 15 of 19 from the floor for 40 points. Outstanding.
He was absolutely awesome. And I'm going to tell you, I watched him Saturday. There were times where he just blended in with everybody else. And it was equal opportunity. And that's how you know they're a real team, because he wasn't like he just did his efficient and they had a bunch of guys that took double digit amounts of shots and they popped the ball around and got good shots. And I mentioned the Baines thing. I went and pulled this up because I wanted to see what their numbers are this year. They're second in the NBA in assists. But Baines, and again, this is all a small sample size, but their highest offensive rating this year is with him on the court. And he is part of that starting unit, which is Rubio, Oubre, Booker, Saric, and Baines. They have outscored their opponents on average by 19 points per 100 possessions, which is absolutely unbelievable. And as a team, they're shooting 47% from the field, 38% from three, and then a unbelievable 82% from the free throw line as a team, which is just a great number, especially with how many games come down to the wire. They're a real team, Kev. They are. They are no longer a laughing stock. And even when they brought off their bench, Javon Carter and Tyler Johnson, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Frank Kaminsky, like, it was good. It was good. You know, I mean, they played well together and they kept the ball moving.
Your point about, you know, how Booker blended in at certain points, I think with the Ricky Rubio signing, we talked about during the summer. I was initially iffy on that signing because of Rubio's deficiencies as a spot up shooter. I worried that might negatively impact Booker when he has the ball, an area that he's already gotten so good as a player. But I think I underrated, but did come around to the idea of Rubio just alleviating pressure off of Booker as a playmaker and how that might impact Booker as a defensive player. He is now back to being a high effort, engaged player, just like he was as a freshman at Kentucky. He wasn't a good defender in college, but he at least put in effort. And we're seeing that now with the Phoenix Suns as a part of a whole collective defensive unit that is trying hard and communicating, like you said, with Baines. I think they are legitimately good on that end of the floor. And then with Booker, though, we are seeing so much more off ball from him. Just like this was my big issue for years now. Everybody's like, Booker's a ball hog. Booker's a ball hog. It's like, it's such bullshit, because Booker in high school and in college was a really savvy off ball player who could cut off ball for layups at the rim, who could relocate off ball and shoot threes off movement. And we're seeing that again now because he actually has a competent playmaker in Rubio who helps facilitate those offensive possessions for him. So we are seeing a more complete Devin Booker on the court with an actual competent supporting cast. Will the Suns make the playoffs in the loaded Western Conference? I don't know. But what we are seeing is a significant step forward a little bit ahead of time for, I thought, but as at least a positive indicator moving forward with this franchise, building around their star in Devin Booker and hopefully a second star in Ayton once he actually gets back, you hope.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to lose our mind too much because it's early in the season. We've done this before with teams that start off well. I just told you, I was very impressed with the way they played. And you're always a three-game losing streak away, right? If they caught a three-game losing streak, now they're 5-5 and nobody, right? Then we're back to, oh, well. But yeah, I do think they're going to have a bunch of wins. I do. They are not going to have anywhere close to the season that they have had the last couple of years. That's my point, right? This is
even if it's a flash in a pan, we're seeing the positive indicators that for years people have ignored, with Devin Booker specifically actually being supported by proven veterans who help elevate his game and he can help elevate theirs.
I went back and looked too. Baines had like the best net rating on the Celtics of anybody that played real minutes last year. I mean, just seeing him, I loved him. And I think I think he blends in perfect. Haley O'Shaughnessy said this on a podcast about 2 weeks ago. She said, all right, you guys ready for a hot take? And she's like, the Suns will be better off with Ayton out. And everybody's like, oh, that is a hot take. Look, he is a supremely talented player. I do think Baines is a great fit with them. You always have to have role players and stars. And I think this enables Booker to be Booker and take over games when he wants to, because Baines keeps the ball moving and Rubio keeps the ball moving and Oubre, even to his credit, and Saric too. Like they've got a good blend there with that starting unit. The way this hurts is they don't have the Ayton loss means they don't have much size. When they take Baines out, they pretty well have to play Frank the Tank at center, which is tough when the other team's got some big guys.
Frank's been pretty good though.
Yeah, but the Baines signing, my initial reaction, and maybe it was an overreaction, is this is the most underrated, you know, acquisition that there's been. I know it was a trade, but I mean, that guy gets paid $5 million a year and he really impacts winning. I love him. I love Baines. Oh,
and in last night's game, in a situation with Joel Embiid out for the Sixers, of course, had Embiid played, Baines would have been on him. But with Embiid out, Baines just completely, from the start of the game, put the clamps on Ben Simmons. Philadelphia needed Simmons to step up in last night's game, and he stunk. He was not good in last night's game. 2 of 8 from the field, 6 points on the offensive end of the floor. He was not an impact. Phoenix pretty much ignored him a lot of the time when he was just hovering in the dunker spot. They were unconcerned when he was rolling towards the rim. I think with Ben Simmons, it was a good example last night of his continued offensive limitations. On the season, Simmons has been just tremendous defensively. Like I said earlier, he made it difficult for Devin Booker. Sometimes there's nothing you can do about a great scorer just getting buckets. But on the offensive end, those limitations remain, and they remain a concern for if you're looking ahead towards the postseason when teams are game planning, because Simmons on the year, shooting 40% in the half court, 56% from the free throw line, 3 of 14 on post-ups, and he still hasn't tried a 3, and he's only tried one shot outside of the paint. Simmons still is a player who struggles to beat smaller players on mismatches. He still has a hard time scoring around the rim against length like Baines, who length without fouling him. Simmons needs to get better. He needs to start becoming a competent shooter by switching hands. He needs to get better at finishing with his left hand around the rim. Those are areas, despite all his strengths, despite him being already a good player, that he needs to get better at in order for this team to not have a severe negative in half-court situations.
I agree with you. I don't know about the hand thing. You are more of the hand expert than I. And I know this has been one of your points for many, many years. He does do a lot of things great, but you look at that team and you do wonder, is their Achilles heel going to be shooting when it comes to big-time playoff games? Because some of these teams, they're going to bury 15, 20 threes on you now with the way the game is played. And you're at a real disadvantage when you don't have, and especially when they've lost a couple guys that did knock down shots for them last year, i.e. Jimmy Butler, i.e. JJ Redick, who averaged over 17 points a game for them last year. But that the Suns team, very, very good. I do want to mention one thing about seeing big credit is they got a real coach. And Monty Williams, first things first on coaching a team, he's got them playing hard. And then the X's and O's come, right? He's got them playing hard and sharing the ball. And Lord knows they have done their players a real disservice by just switching coach after coach after coach. I think they've landed on one. And you can tell those players really respect him, and he's got them playing hard and sharing the ball with each other. Observation-wise, seeing them in person, and for everybody that goes to an NBA game this year and happens to see the Suns in person, I want you to look for this, because, Kevin, I was blown away. I think Mikal Bridges, who comes off their bench, obviously we know him from Villanova, I think he has the longest arms I have ever seen in my life. And I went and looked it up. You know, he's got a 7'1" wingspan, but it's on like a 6'7" frame. You know, like Giannis has got like a 7'3" wingspan, but he's like damn near 7 foot tall. This guy, if you're standing up and you put your hand in your pocket, right, you'd have a slight bend in your arm. Most anybody, right? His have got to be like 90 degrees to reach in his pocket. I have never seen anybody with longer arms than Mikal Bridges. And I guess I just hadn't noticed before, but I've spent half the game looking. I'm like, this is crazy. I've never seen a guy with this kind of a wingspan on that kind of a frame. And their bench is kind of fun, you know, with Frank the Tank and him. And I love Javon Carter, you know. Tyler Johnson's always a good role playing, you know, can get you, can be a little spark plug. I don't know about Cam Johnson, but he's going to figure it out, hopefully. They don't have anybody. I think Cam Johnson, when I looked it up, was the only player on their team with a negative net rating through seven games, which is crazy. We're talking about the Suns here.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the way this team develops, not just this season, but still in the future, because someone like Mikal Bridges, who you mentioned with his long ass arms, like I think that 7 foot one wingspan, that's a lie. It's going to be more like 7'7". He has his arms are so freaking long, dude.
I've never seen anything like it. Seriously. Like when you go and see him in person, anybody that goes watch a Suns game, go look at it. I mean, his arms like have to stay bent the whole time. Otherwise, they would be like halfway down his leg. It's like a cartoon.
I mean, he can tie his shoes without bending over.
It's insane.
But with Bridges, he shot only 33% from three last season. This season, he's only 1 of 7. That needs to get better. Cameron Johnson drafted him for his shooting. 5 of 15 so far this season. That's a super small sample size, so who cares? But the point being is that you have him to be a knockdown guy. These are some players at the wing position that need to be good shooters. And Kelly Oubre, so far this season, he's shooting better than he has in the past. We'll see how sustainable that actually is. But it's critical for Phoenix that these wing players, Saric, Bridges, Johnson, Oubre, that they continue to produce defensively. But their three-point shots need to be maintained, or else at some point, in matchups where teams are game planning for you, whether that's the playoffs or whether it's a big game with playoff implications, that's when those guys get helped off of, and suddenly Devin Booker may not have the driving lanes that he once had. So these guys need to be able to produce as shooters.
We were both in arenas last night. I saw the Rockets in person for the first time this year playing against the Grizzlies. Now, it was not a great representative of the Rockets. It was more like the old Rockets because Westbrook sat out resting last night. So it was James Harden and four other guys. But he had 44 in the game. And he is just unstoppable. I watched him warm up before the game, and he practices all that stuff that you think, you know, is improvisational during the game, like all the step backs and all that, you know, almost the things that look like travels. He's practicing every bit of that before he even gets into the games. But the scariest was, and this was one of those, and I saw a lot of NBA Twitter freaking out about it, was Ja Morant tried to explode on someone. He's done this three times this year where he has just tried to end someone with the most ferocious dunk. And the way he landed and the way his leg twisted last night was extremely scary. And
freaks me out.
These mega fast twitch guys, you know, the landing is the hard part. They get up so high and they get up so fast. It's truly incredible that Westbrook has been as durable as he has throughout the years, because whether it was a Derrick Rose or whether it was, you know, a Zach LaVine got hurt. We're dealing with the Zion thing now. You know, sometimes, especially when you are going so fast and you are getting up so high so quickly, very, very difficult to land. And you want to talk about an audible gasp. Oh, my God. So he's got to watch himself, or else, you know, I'm sitting here with my fingers crossed on Morant, because that was, you just don't see guys, number one, trying to dunk on people like that. Number two, landing like that. And it does freak you out a little bit.
It was scary, man. I mean, if you pause the image when he falls, it looks like something horrible just happened.
Yes.
I'm thankful that nothing did happen there. With Houston this season, man, for them, it's nice to see them have a game where they hold somebody to just 100 points.
Yeah, I mean that was the Grizzlies without Jaren Jackson.
I know.
No, they got real defensive problems though.
I'm just saying, exactly. They've had some serious issues.
Don't let that score confuse you. They still have real defensive problems. Grizzlies just can't score in the half court, and it became a half court game in the third quarter. That team is, they're going to give up a boatload of points this year. That's not going to be uncommon. Watching them, I know the number's low. Their defense sucks.
How did you feel about James Harden's nut punch on Jay Crowder?
I have never seen anything like that in my life. I've never seen another player hit another player in the nuts.
Oh.
And no.
How about Marcus Smart?
No. Hold on now, Kevin. This is what people, an NBA official, like the referee thing that they have, that Twitter feed, they tweeted it out. You know what they didn't mention? You know, they said it went, like, they want to like pat themselves on the back, and then it got reviewed and it was issued a flagrant one to James Harden, right?
Really?
Like, yes, that's what they went and reviewed it. You know what they don't mention in the official review? Number one, Jay Crowder was thrown out of the game. Number two, and actually, that's number two. Number one, they called a foul on Jay Crowder. And then went and reviewed it and said, actually, it is not a personal foul on Crowder. It is a flagrant foul on Harden. But in real time, James Harden punched a guy in the nuts, and the foul was called on the guy that got punched in the nuts. I'm like, are you kidding me? I have never seen that in my life, ever.
I also just want to say the shot Harden took after that happened against Dylan Brooks, the step back, sidestep, three-pointer. I don't even know what to call it, but oh my God. God, like that shot was outrageous.
It's
like he literally stepped back to the side at the same time to create space, and still pretty well defended by the opponent. But like, oh my goodness, dude, that what a dagger!
You know, he annoys me, but I freely admit he is unstoppable. There's nothing you can do when you can hit that kind of crap. There's nothing you can do. I mean, I am in awe, absolute awe of his talents. I don't like the flailing around. I don't like that he can punch somebody in the nuts and get the foul called on the guy that's got his nuts punched. But
was that really a purposeful punch, though?
I think it was probably a little nut tap.
One thing Harden's been doing this season is he's been like dead arming his offhand so he doesn't get called for offensive fouls. Like he kind of just lays his arm out straight down instead of bringing it up. And I wonder if maybe that's what he was trying to do, is just keep his arm down. But then he just happened to hit Crowder in a very sensitive area.
I always think the funniest is if anybody was watching the game last night, Kyle Anderson, when he guards him, he puts his hands up as if you were like standing over a bonfire to get your hands warm. You know what I mean? Like he's just got his hands, like his palms are up in the air like the entire time, as if to say, I am not touching this human being. And it is, I've never seen anybody else in the league guard him that way, but it is absolutely hysterical. You were at the Pelicans Brooklyn for a bit last night and got to see at least a portion of Brandon Ingram's huge breakout season is continuing, and he had 40 points. And it was not free throws either. He only had 5 free throws, 17 of 24 from the field, 5 rebounds, 5 assists to go along with his 40 points. What was the Brandon Ingram experience like?
He's come a long, long way, Chris. It's remarkable to see. Laker Film Room on Twitter put a good tweet about this morning in regards to Ingram. He's covered Ingram for years when he was with the Lakers and obviously now with the Pelicans. It is all coming together for Ingram. You know, LFR mentioned how in the past with Ingram, it was like, is he a 1-foot leaper or 2-foot leaper, you know, at the rim. And now with Ingram, he has become one of the better at rim finishers in basketball, using his long arms, finishing with either his left or right hand. off of 1 foot off or off of 2 feet. He has become a guy. His handle is so tight from the perimeter. His ability to create at the end of the clock using step, sidestep pull-ups or step backs from mid-range and occasionally from three. He has become a dynamic and nearly complete offensive player. The three-point shot still needs to be proven over a longer period of time, but Ingram is finally growing into the player that I thought he could be pre-draft when I had him ranked first in 2016, and what a lot of people have seen flashes of with the Lakers. And his defense has regressed on this very horrific Pelicans defensive team, but it's really nice to see Ingram coming together on the offensive end of the floor. Granted, the Pelicans still haven't been good. I mean, they lost.
Well, here's the thing. Two things on him. Number one, he only turned 22 in September.
Yeah. And sometimes he's so young.
Yeah. Sometimes we do lose sight of that. The other thing is how quickly it is forgotten that there was at least a moment in time where people worried about his career because of the very serious medical condition that he had. But here's hoping that all of that now he is totally in the clear, and it's unbelievable to think in 3 years' time, he will be a 25-year-old player. And we have seen the progression now to what he looks like in a game like last night. What is he going to look like 3 years from now? He could be one of the great players in the league.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think it doesn't matter. Like, these guys don't have to be compared. They just happen to be in the same draft, but there's still a chance Brandon Ingram ends up the best player from the 2016 NBA draft. You're talking about Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, and of course, Pascal Siakam. Those are the three guys that really have a chance to be the best from that class. And, you know, Simmons, you know, for the first couple seasons looked like clearly that guy. Then Siakam emerges and he's made another leap this season, which we've talked about before, which you and I both agree is real. But Ingram, I still think, has the highest upside of these guys because of his blend of talents. It can become that dynamic scorer around the floor. He still has really good playmaking instincts and vision off the dribble. I think if you empower Ingram to be more of a playmaker, he can do that for you. And we've seen in the past, not this season with New Orleans, he's been poor defensively, as has an entire team. But the last two seasons with the Lakers, he's been really, really good on the defensive end of the floor. So with Ingram, you know you can have a potential star two-way player. And right now we're seeing the flashes on the offense, and hopefully at some point he's able to do it with the defensive end as well. But at just 22 years old, still a shot that Ingram ends up the best in the league from the 2016 draft.
All right, we got to talk about some news and notes that we will get to on the other side. But first, these words. Today's episode of The Mismatch is brought to you by Roman. With 2/3 of guys experiencing noticeable hair loss by age 35, most guys assume losing their hair is inevitable as they age. Some don't care, some shave their heads, some embrace hats. But what they don't know is there are FDA-approved medications designed to stop hair loss and even regrow hair. That's why we're excited to partner with our sponsor, Roman. Roman makes it easy and safe to get FDA-approved hair loss treatment, all from your phone or computer. And when you go to GetRoman.com/RingerNBA, your online visit is free. Consult with a U.S. licensed physician through their secure online platform. No awkward conversations with receptionists or reading bad magazines in the waiting room. Once your doctor ensures that your treatment is safe and effective for you, Roman's dedicated pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free 2-day shipping in discreet packaging. If you're noticing unwanted hair loss, starting treatment early is key, and Roman can help. And today, Roman is giving the Ringer NBA show listeners a free online visit at GetRoman.com/RingerNBA. That's GetRoman.com/RingerNBA for a free visit to get started. Go to GetRoman.com/RingerNBA. Today's episode is also brought to you by Luminary, a podcast subscription service with some of the best content around. I'm excited about Luminary because it's the only place I can listen to The Ringer's amazing new podcast, Sonic Boom, How Seattle Lost Its Team, hosted by our very own Jordan Ritter-Kahn. If you're a fan of sports, great investigative journalism, or both, this is definitely a podcast you can't miss. check out Sonic Boom. For more than four decades, the Seattle Supersonics were among the NBA's most iconic franchises, but in 2008, they packed their bags for Oklahoma City. Sonic Boom tells a story of basketball and politics, wealth and power. Hear from NBA legends, politicians, diehard fans, and business executives. Sonic Boom unearths never-before-heard truths about the NBA's greatest heist. Along with Sonic Boom, Luminary offers more than 40 podcasts you can't find anywhere else, including two more from The Ringer, Break Stuff, The Story of Woodstock 1999, and the rewatchable spinoff, The Rewatchables 1999. The Luminary app is free to download and gives you access to way more than just their own content. You can use it to listen to thousands of other shows, including this one. Get your first 2 months of access to Luminary's premium content for free when you sign up at luminary.link/ringerNBA. After that, it's only $7.99 a month. That's luminary.link/ringerNBA for 2 months of free access. luminary.link/ringerNBA. Cancel anytime. Terms apply. All right, Kev, we've got a couple other things to talk about before we get out of here. Anthony Davis is probably getting a PR lesson today after the Lakers are playing against the Chicago Bulls. And did you see the video from this event that he was at? The headlines are, you know, calling Chicago a mecca of basketball. And then when they asked him about playing in Chicago, he said, I mean, I'm a free agent next year, but we will see. And if you didn't want to get asked questions about, what's to come after this season, like it's just better off to not say anything in that situation. But now it's kind of out there like, oh my God, could Anthony Davis leave after one season after they just gave up all their awesome young talent? What did you make when you saw the headline/video of Anthony Davis at this so-called, I guess, nothing is private anymore, but event he did in Chicago.
I look forward to Anthony Davis signing with the Bulls when he's like in his mid 30s. it would be shocking, utterly shocking, if he were to leave the best team in the Western Conference as the leader of the number one defense in basketball, the Lakers so far this season. It would be really, really shocking if AD were to leave there. Something would have to go serious long over the next couple months. But you know what, man? Like, speaking, like, he can speak openly about that. Like, maybe someday he will want to go back to Chicago. Maybe it would be after signing a 4-year extension or something like that with the Lakers. Maybe it's at age 30 that he goes back there.
We've just seen this. But he said, I'm a free agent next year. Yeah, he didn't say,
I know.
We'll see down the road.
Yeah, like, I know.
This is just terrible. And you remember last year, Kyrie Irving said the thing at the season ticket holder event. And then by the time he was being asked, he's like, hey, you know, I'm a free agent next year. Like, the Lakers just don't need this hanging out there because, you know, they're in a massive media market. And it's like, could he leave? I mean, that is the one good thing. And I know the guy doesn't talk anyway, but to his credit, Kawhi Leonard, most people thought he was just, you know, a mercenary, but like, He didn't talk about free agency at all, just kept his head down, and they ended up winning the damn title. Not great to be bringing up, hey, I'm a free agent next year.
Here's the thing. I think this is a continuation of what happened before the deadline when remember, they had a list. Clutch had a list of teams that AD would play for.
Yep.
And then AD came out and said, no, I would play for all 30 teams, right? Yeah. I think this is a similar type of thing here.
That's his hometown, though.
I know it is. I understand. It's a total tease for Bulls fans. And it is different with Chicago than it would be with other cities. But with AD, like what he's saying, you know, he's technically right that anything's a possibility with him being a free agent.
Yeah, but look, he just forced his way out of a place last year, and it wasn't great. And now he's like, I mean, things are going good for the Lakers. He's like, yeah, you know what? I'm a free agent next year. You never know. Like, what?
you never do know. Maybe he wins a championship and he's like, no, you know what? I want to go to Chicago. Who knows? You never know. But the fact is that right now the Lakers have the best team in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with Anthony Davis just being absolutely spectacular on the defensive end of the floor with the talent that they have there. I mean, Dwight Howard, he has been so So good for them. Avery Bradley looks rejuvenated as a defender at the point of attack. Never mind with Danny Green on the wing, LeBron James putting in consistent effort on the defensive end of the floor. This defense has been remarkably great, and I don't see that slowing down at any point this season.
Couple other notes. What do you make of David Fizdale responding to the amount of minutes that RJ Barrett plays by bringing up Latrell Sprewell 20 years ago and how many minutes a game he played? Played 41 minutes in what was a beatdown to the Sacramento Kings. He is averaging 37 minutes per game. The leaders in the NBA are Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Damian Lillard, RJ Barrett. So he is in the top five in minutes played per game so far this year. Fizz said everybody should just drop it. Do you think RJ Barrett's minutes count is a real thing that there should be a level of concern over?
I would say Fizdale's response was kind of silly. And it's something to monitor. And I don't think RJ Barrett should have been playing as much as he did in that game. It seemed like wasteful minutes. But, you know, there are players across the league who do get 36 plus, 37 plus minutes per game. Yeah, like last year, there's nobody. Last year, Bradley Beal and Paul George had 36.9 minutes. Harden was at 36.8. Westbrook was at 36. They were the only four players to average over 36 minutes per game in the NBA. This year, early season, there's nine guys. And with Barrett, hopefully over the course of the year, that number progressively falls down a little bit. And that's something to monitor. I'm not reading too much into it right now, but if that continues with more games where Barrett is getting minutes when he shouldn't be playing, I think then it becomes a problem. And I wonder, in a city with the Knicks where often people look for a scapegoat, I wonder if at some point people look at Fizdale and are like, what's this guy playing our star rookie player for when he doesn't need to be playing this many minutes? At some point, is there pressure on Fizdale to change? Does that happen at some point? I don't know. I mean, put it this way.
Most players hit a rookie wall anyway. If you're playing almost 40 minutes a night, that rookie wall is going to come sooner.
Sure. And that's the thing. It's like you're not building just for this year with RJ Barrett. You're building for the future. And I'm not sure those extra 5 minutes, the pros of that would outweigh any potential cons. I think with RJ, managing his minutes is probably the smart thing to do. One interesting thing, there was a story in the New York Post today that there was fire Fizdale chants from the crowd when they got blown out by the Kings Sunday afternoon. I didn't hear them. I was at the game. I did not hear those, but just interesting that there probably is a portion of Knicks fans who are angry with Fizdale's usage of Barrett and perhaps just his overall coaching.
Yeah. Well, you know what the chants were after in the first week of the season? It was to play Frank.
Why wouldn't you play Frank Ntilikina?
Okay, fine. He played Frank. That's what he did. He played him and he got his ass kicked. And so now it's like, well, fire Fizdale. Like, wait. Hold on. You're the one that told me to play Frank Ntilikina. The guy is shooting 30% from the field and 0% from three. I'm playing him. What do you want?
He's not shooting 0% from three, Chris. He's shooting 23.1%.
Whatever. Same thing. Same thing. I mean, this is what I know. It's like, hold on now. You can't be chanting at me. Play Frank, play Frank, play Frank, free Frank, and then I play him, and then we get our ass kicked, and you're like, fire Fizdale. Like, which is it? What do you want?
And also, I mean, like, this is a season with the Knicks where, like, you want them to be losing games. You want this team to suck. It would be bad news for the Knicks if they were to somehow slip into the postseason. You want this team to be bad to get another top pick. Rooting for a loss is the right thing to do for a Knicks fan right now.
Oh, God.
Come on. You know it's true, Chris. You know it's true.
They've been rooting for losses for 20 years.
Yeah, what? But you can't change the past.
They rooted for losses last year and then didn't get the prize. They didn't get Zion. If there's anything we have learned, you don't root for losses because you'll never get a really good free agent to want to play there.
Really?
It is the lesson of the Nets. It is the lesson of the Clippers. Oh, it is better to be competitive.
You're ignoring situations in which teams didn't sign players. It's like you're talking about Philadelphia. They have signed multiple guys.
Not until they got good.
You look way back at this 96-97 Spurs who tanked their asses off with David Robinson.
Oh my
being
God. Let's bring up examples from 35 years ago. 35 years!
That's not
if you
got
to go back 35 years to find 20, a team.
23 years. But the point is that those examples are no less significant. Tanking is just one strategy, and trying to win is just one strategy too. Neither necessarily guarantee future success. It's about looking at the situation and what positions you to best be successful. With the Knicks, the next 2 years, it's important for them to be competitive, to play hard, and try to win. And they are. They are trying, but they suck. My only point was that it is beneficial for them to lose. It is not beneficial for them, a team that needs to change their perception around the league, to try to lose. But they're going to lose even when they try to win. And that's what I'm saying is the best case scenario for this team this season. Then next year, you hope they make some incremental progress in terms of winning games.
They should be better than they are. They need some non-shitty guards is what they need. In fact, just one and they'd be okay.
Well, I mean, RJ has been running a lot of points for them.
I know.
Julius Randle has too. He's
in his first 10 games in his career. You know?
Randle has handled the ball quite a lot too for them. You're right that they don't have a traditional point guard, but with Randle and Barrett, two non-traditional playmakers, it has been cool to see them incorporate larger guys in that role.
Yeah. You know, earlier, one last thing. We were talking about Brandon Ingram so far this year and this huge breakout season that he has had, at least in the early season. He is averaging over 25 points per game, and I went and pulled this up. Do you know that so far, and again, you know, we're talking 7-8 games, there are 15 players in the league that are averaging over 25 points per game. James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Giannis, Trae Young, Luka, Brad Beal, Kemba, Booker, Siakam, Ingram, Donovan Mitchell, LeBron. And then Kyle Lowry's averaging 24. I mean, that is unbelievable. 15 guys in the league that are averaging over 25 points per game. And Brandon Ingram's in that mix, at least for right now. How about that? I just named a who's who.
Kyrie Irving in yesterday's game was pretty spectacular as well. I mean, we didn't talk about the team that actually
He's averaging over 30 a game, I think. Yeah, I think he's second in the league right
now.
He's
been awesome.
The other one is the Luka show has been real. I mean, good grief. What do you have, like 15 and 14 as the other numbers the other night against Cleveland? It's like 27, 15, and 14 or something. I think he's averaging a triple-double or is very close to it in this early season. And he'll certainly be a Western Conference All-Star, that's for sure.
Chris, Luka, first of all, he's my favorite player to watch right now in basketball. I love watching young players blossom into stars, and Luka, at 20 years old, putting in up the numbers that he is, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 9.5 assists, nearly a triple-double, as you said, with pretty good efficiency and diversity in the way in which he's scoring and creating shots for others. That game that he had against the Lakers, a loss for the Mavericks, the second half of that performance, man, the passes that he was making off the dribble with such precision to lob threats, to spot up three-point shooters, it was one of the best passing performances that I can remember seeing in a long, long time. And with Luka Doncic, I would go as far to say, even at 20 years old, he's already one of the 10 best players in the NBA.
It certainly appears that way through the first 7 or 8 games of the season. I will give you that. Kevin, it's always fun. There'll be a bunch more happen by the time we get to Friday. Hopefully there's no other young stars suspended by the time we get to Friday. But either way, we'll talk about all of it and what has taken place. I'll talk to you on Friday.
I'm looking forward to it, Chris. Have a good one.
Thanks to everybody for listening to another episode of The Mismatch. If you dig what you're hearing, go give us a rating and review on iTunes. 5 stars, 5 stars. It really helps. And we will talk to you on Friday.